Originality.
You.
Welcome to Autographs. My name is Nick Singh, and just know originality is on the horizon. Let's go. All right, what's cooking, good lookers? We are back with another episode. My name is Nick Singh, and you are listening to Autographs. If you haven't heard before, this is actually season two, and my goal with season two is to bring folks onto the show that are a little bit younger, somewhere between their 20s and 30s, and then give you a more relatable view on fulfillment and a view that's a little bit less far gone. So I hope that you get that from this episode and the episodes coming and the episodes past. But that being said, today's guest is actually somebody who I've recently become friends with. His name is Jason Wan, but if you're looking him up on Instagram, he goes by @pug, that's @PUG, or @eggroll on Twitter. And he's a badass when it comes to posting, and all of this stuff just inspires so many ideas in me. So I highly suggest you go check him out. The best way to describe Jason is that he makes shit go viral. That's literally what he does for a living. He's done it with countless products and services and individuals. The tenure and the course of his career has just been incredible. And the funny thing is that he's just so young and he's really only getting started, from making ice cream cones, plastic ice cream cones go viral, to ramen noodle commons. I know that's a bit of a weird one, but stay with me here. He made the Holy Meme Bible go viral. He was actually the founder of some of these products. And just an incredible entrepreneur at a very young age who's done some fascinating stuff. He actually made his restaurant go viral. It's called Show Me Nudes. They serve ramen noodles, but he called it Show Me Nudes, and it has this whole influencer social play on it. So my real goal with Jason was to sit him down and take into consideration how many things he made viral, and try to understand and pull from him the things that he looks at when he wants to bring something to market. Because Jason's real magic, in my opinion, isn't actually him making things go viral. It's fly. But I can tell you, it is his acumen in business at such a young age. He's actually younger than I am, and it's just so beyond his years. And I think he knows that. He's built a few multi-million dollar companies. He's no joke. And he's had a few exits as well. The guy's incredibly successful. And while his business acumen is really impressive and his ability to make things go viral is awesome, I can tell you wholeheartedly that the thing that I personally love most about him is that he's a true giver. He recently released a course. I'm not plugging the course. You can take it if you want to. But I can tell you, I've taken a look at it. He sent me the code and I looked on the inside, and this is the most in-depth, most well thought out e-commerce course that I've ever seen on the planet. He really just gave everything that he had. And right now it's his mission in life to just provide for people more opportunities. As you'll hear in this interview, he doesn't believe that he's creating competitors by giving away some of his strategies and secrets, because he just wants more people in the market. And he believes that there's more than enough sun to shine on everyone. So with that, I'm going to let you folks enjoy the interview. My name is Nick Singh. You're listening to Autographs. I'll see you on the other end. Peace. How you doing, man?
I'm chilling. You know, it's been a few days in Toronto.
What brings you back home?
My mom's actually in Toronto, so I'm just visiting her.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Very cool. So I understand that you work out often. What's your favorite body part?
Chest and arms.
Chest?
It's like the easiest part to work out.
Just generally speaking, what's your favorite body part? Workout aside.
That's a hard one. I think my traps.
Your traps?
Yeah. It's once you have your traps, it's like, boom.
Traps? That's an interesting answer. Okay, cool. Yeah. I was just fucking with you, man. But on some real shit, how does it feel to be the face of Asian Canadian culture?
Well, I don't really personally think that I'm the face of it.
I'm kidding, man. I'm literally just fucking with you. I'm throwing you some curveballs. I'm trying to throw Jason off his game. He's done too many interviews and had too many press junkets, so I'm trying to shake things up a bit and make things interesting for him.
Those are the two questions I've never been asked before.
Yeah, what's your favorite body part? How does it feel to be the face of Canadian culture? I like it. I sent you a list of questions, and there is one that I didn't include on purpose because it's fun, and I didn't include those ones either. And here it is, but it's not going to
it shouldn't throw you off, but well, it hopefully will throw you off, but in a good way. I want to get things started creatively. So whenever I start interviews, I love to chat about different stuff. And I always try to think of unique ways to bring guests onto the show and help people understand what they're really fucking good at. And I'm going to give you an introduction in a bit, but you are insanely talented at viral marketing. You know that. Everyone who knows you knows that. If you're listening and you don't know this guy, you will know that soon. And I'm curious. I had a friend of mine recently say, you know, Nick, if one of the US, and this has nothing to do with politics, by the way, the question is all about viral marketing, so take the politics out of it. But if one of the US candidates, be it Trump, be it Bernie, just started like a vlog, a YouTube vlog or something like that, they would adhere to so many young people in an instant. And it got me thinking, and I wanted to ask you, if you had Bernie as a client or Trump, you can take your choice. And again, it's not political. How would you make them go viral, go trending, and stay trending in a positive way? A little brain exercise for you.
Well, I actually did get hit up by political campaigns back in the days. A few months ago to run internal campaigns for them. Can't really name who.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I turn them down. It's not even who I'm with. It's about getting involved in politics and marketing. It's a very risky issue because you've seen like what happens in 2016 with the whole Cambridge Analytica, Facebook ads for all these candidates. I'm like, no, I don't really want to touch. I don't want to be on the headline of something. Oh, you know, Jason Watt has helped. And he say things that are very catchy. Like when people look at it, they're like, yeah, I can definitely repeat after him and say, yeah, I want to make this statement or I want to make this movement.
Yeah.
But if you want to do it for the other candidate, you just got to turn all the way to the left. And
interesting.
And that's the guy that could lead that, you know?
Okay, interesting. But what would you do like tactical wise? I want to stretch you a little bit. Like what would that look like? Would it look like a YouTube vlog? How would you make this shit happen?
I would like to run Bernie's account like a Wendy's account.
Like a Wendy's account? Are you talking about the fast food franchise?
Yeah, like
on Twitter. I've never seen the Wendy's account.
Wendy's is probably one of the best fast food account to follow on the internet.
Okay.
I'll love for you to read some of their tweets later on, but like he just speaks like a teenage girl.
Are you serious?
Yeah, like I don't know who runs the account, but it's just like they're so relatable and they understand the trend very well without being cringy. Because there's political campaigns like Hillary Clinton back in the day was trying to be like the kids, like, you know, hey, cool kids, I'm also a cool mom, you know.
And, but she wasn't.
And then got people like, man, I really don't want to like her now because like she's trying really hard. But if we're able to like integrate ourselves into the teenage trend and into the community using their language and the trend without overdoing it, I think that can really move the message forward.
Interesting, man. Yeah. Interesting. So maybe Bernie's going to hit you up and you can't say no. I don't know. We'll see. Anyways, that does it for the messed up questions. But I do want to start a little bit off junket still. I know that you're here with Amy. Amy doesn't have a mic, but Amy's Jason's girlfriend. She's wonderful. And whenever I see them on Instagram, they're always doing something neat and undoubtedly almost unprecedentedly, it always involves food. So what are some of your favorite spots to hit up and eat in Toronto? I'm curious.
In Toronto, we just went to another seafood restaurant the other day where they make a tower of lobsters.
A tower of lobsters? So what attracts you to go to a place? Are you like a savory guy? Are you guys like a sweet, savory,
we
salty?
We like to go to places that we haven't gone before. We like challenges and sometimes you don't like it. But at least you can say I tried it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So whenever people ask me for food recommendations, at least I can give them a lot more options than just be like, yeah, these are my three favorite places. I could be like, here's the 10 places I've been. You've probably seen them on Instagram. I actually don't like half of them. I can actually say that.
Interesting.
Because you can actually try it.
So you're willing to pay the money for bad food if it's a good experience.
Yeah, I mean like,
or if it's a new experience.
What's the point of eating the same food every single time, right?
Where does that love for food come from?
My family's in a restaurant business. You know, my entire extended family, aunts and uncles, every single one of them has owned a restaurant in the United States.
Oh, not here in Canada.
We also have like a couple here, but
okay.
Every single one of them that immigrated from China has a restaurant. And the reason for that is because whenever immigrants come into a country, they like to work with other family members that have established residency here already. So if their family member here have restaurants, they'll like to work in the restaurant. And then once they have enough money, they'll open their own restaurants. Reason for that is because once you have the established network of in relationship with vendors and you understand how restaurants work, you want to open your own, and then that creates a chain of restaurants for our entire extended family. So we do sushi, we do Japanese, we do Chinese food, anything that really, you know, gets us going.
It's like your own little empire.
Yeah, so I grew up in the restaurant business. I grew up in the back when chopping veggies, I was, you know, wrapping stuff, cutting shrimp. 8 years old,
very humble beginnings.
And the cashier, and then once I could cook, I stood there and cook. At 12.
At 12?
Yeah, I started cooking.
Cooking like entrees?
Yeah, seriously. Like beef and broccoli over rice. I know how to do fried rice too. So I just grew up eating food and seeing food and being around so much food from the raw beginning. Like we used to grow stuff in the backyard too. So seeing it from the beginning to the end plate got me very intrigued.
Yeah, and you're still an amazing chef. I was actually borderline thinking about booking this interview and booking this conversation at like a public kitchen. Yeah, I'm serious. I was just going to be like, mic us up and lav us up and like... But I don't want to put you to work on your vacation to Canada. I don't know if you could call it that, but that's interesting. And as a sub point off of that, I'm curious, and I promise you, if you're listening, we're not only here to talk about food and restaurants, but I do love food as well. I know you own a restaurant. It's called Show Me Nudes, and it's spelled interestingly. It's in California. A lot of folks who have passions, like cooking, as an example, or food. And some of those passions alike are like music or pop culture or whatever it may be. The advice that's currently being given to them about careers in life is go all in on your passions. There's like a conversation and a thread that says that. I know that you did start a restaurant, but you also do a lot more things. I'm curious why with this passion that you have for food, did you not just stick to the food industry?
I really truly believe in the advice to follow your passion, but I'm also a very realistic person. Understand that if someone goes all in on their passion, sometimes they'll just fail completely. So I like to have backups. So I didn't go into food first. I got into what I was comfortable with, which was social media and e-commerce.
You got into that first?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With Trendy, right?
Yeah, Trendy Co.
Got
it. Yeah, so I started selling t-shirts online. I started, you know, selling different stuff through my Tumblr network because I was a huge influencer back in the day. And doing things that made money first that I wasn't really passionate about got me the money to do stuff I was passionate about later. So I didn't go all into a restaurant because you would just fail. You don't understand what it does, how to market it, how to run the entire thing. So I believe that you should chase your passion if you have like a good solid plan and a backup plan.
Interesting.
You can't just, you know, risk it all for, you know, become an artist or like a backpack traveler, right? Like that's not gonna get you that far.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It's an interesting train of thought because I think a lot of folks from the outside looking in, me included, sometimes will look at somebody with your success or different kinds of success and they'll say, those people take risks. Those people love risk. But the more I listen, the more I hear you guys speak and folks alike and yourself, the more I hear you enjoy risk, but you enjoy intelligent risk. Risk where you know that there's a pretty high fucking chance for there to be an upside.
It's calculated. It's all calculated.
Every single time?
I can say it's calculated to a T. Like there's not a formula.
Yeah.
But understand that if this fails, I have an extra plan.
Interesting.
And I have plans that, you know, if that plan fails, I have another plan. So it's not like just going all in, throw 100K at a business and see if it grows. It's like throw 100K, but if it doesn't work out, I have another like part that I actually secretly saved up to do another project.
Interesting.
Or maybe I want to throw 100K into 5 different projects and see what fails and what success. So there's very calculated risk that we take. It's not just when people say like, yeah, entrepreneurs take a lot of risk. They think that we just got to throw money into a wall and see.
Like you're idiots.
Maybe they grow. Yeah. No, like really good people actually know that if one thing fails and they know that there's a high chance that it will fail, they need to do something else to support that failure and get back to on their feet.
Got it. Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. And as an opportunity to digress a little bit, because I know we've touched on it a little bit, for folks on here that don't know who you are, it's been said time and time again, so I don't want to be too washed out. If you're listening and you want to know who Jason is, please, I just encourage you to check out his Instagram. It's at Pug, his Twitter at Eggroll. You could ask him yourself how he got those names, but on a different note, you can also hear a story there. But as a brief recap for folks that would like to hear since already listening, how would you describe your story?
Man, I get that question so many
times. I know, that's why I didn't want to harp on it.
No. I actually like it because it trains me to have a good answer. The thing is, I don't have a good answer.
Okay.
The issue is that I do so many different things, and I'm not just saying that just to tell people that I do a lot of things, but I really do. I do clothing, I do import, export, I do fulfillment, I do sourcing, I do marketing.
Amy's like, nodding her head. She's like, I know.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, as a CEO of a very, very beginning started company, like at 16 year old when I started my first company, you have to wear every single hat in the company. You can't just go on be a CEO and hire 10 people if you have $500.
Yeah.
That's what I started out with.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have to learn every single thing. I do design too. I learn how to do design. I learn how to do video editing. I do so many different things that it's hard to be like, yeah, I just run a company.
Yeah.
So depending on who I talk to and how much time I have with them, I will say something very broad or something very specific. Or if I know that someone's actually relevant in the industry that I'm actually working in, I'll be a little bit more specific about the exact thing that I do. But for the most part, I think the good introduction is that I'm a visionary. I create things.
I'd agree with that.
And not creating just like, you know, artwork, but I create like strategies, I create opportunities, I create new revenue channels for my company. So whether that is in product, software, or fashion, or even restaurants, I create things. So that's the easiest way that I can say about what I do without just be like, yeah, I do marketing.
Right? It's much broader than that. Nowadays, when you hear a young person say they do marketing, it immediately equates to social media advertising and all that stuff. But I know with you, it's a bajillion times more.
I don't like the term entrepreneur.
Really?
I
was actually going to ask you that. I was going to ask you, but I might as well now. It's great. How do you identify yourself?
No, it's like I know on paper and technical terms I am, but I feel like
you're not dim sum restaurant.
On my Instagram, my page category is actually dim sum restaurant for those that didn't understand.
Yeah, that don't understand. Yeah.
But I don't like to use that term anymore just because it's so overused by people who actually aren't. You know, they're the wannabe entrepreneur, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to call myself an entrepreneur. I don't want to call myself a marketer because those terms are so overused by people who aren't doing it that as soon as I use it, I become one of them. So I try to stay away from it. It's not just me being cockier and be like, yeah, you know, I don't want to call it that. It's literally because everyone that does it and call themselves it aren't really doing anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just a creator. Like, I'm a creative. I would say, like, I'm an artist. And I don't want to, like, debate about what an artist is, but I create, you know, products, I create new brands, mm-hmm. I create new businesses. And in all of those categories, I designed them to be unique.
Yeah.
And in that way, I considered myself an artist. But, you know, on paper, technical terms, I am an entrepreneur, I guess.
Yeah, no, I would agree with everything. You certainly are an artist, man. And just to walk the folks, I'll walk them through the lineage just so they could understand some important milestones. Oops, bumped the mic. Just so they could understand some important milestones. If I miss any, jump in. I know you started out at the age of 15, 16 years old, but it was younger than that. You were doing the whole chopping gum packages in high school. Most people went for drugs. You went for gum packages, which I think is neat. And then you started Trendyco, which I thought was really cool. And you hit some incredible milestones with Trendyco. I understand that. But I understand that what a lot of this came from was a deep desire for you to connect because you had immigrated from China with your mom at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And you just wanted to understand, A, how to speak the language properly, but B, how to insert yourself into culture in a meaningful and, I guess, proper way. And you described that in a ton of your interviews as you used to watch a lot of movies and TV shows like Friends and Full House and used to understand a lot of cultural norms. And that eventually, this is me kind of putting the pieces together, led you to understanding how comedy works over here. And that gave you a head start on memes. And then memes ended up leading for the inspiration to your... what a lot of people know you for, which is the Holy Meme Bible, which is an incredibly successful product. It did 200K in 6 weeks. And then it went on to be, I think, a multi-million dollar product.
Yeah.
And I think you sold that, right?
In the process of selling. We're going to make this year's edition and then sell it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Right. So there'll be one more edition for you folks out there who want to get the Holy Meme Bible, which is a meme coloring book. And that was a product under the dank tank with had a ton of just viral content and viral products like ramen noodle condoms and other really trippy things. And your life has been characterized while these things have been happening by these really unique milestones. Like you went viral for ice cream cones, which we'll talk about in a bit as well, which I thought was kind of neat. And all of that seemingly to present day brings us up to what you're currently working on, which is Dough Lashes. And that's a very successful, moderate and financially feasible, but also high quality eyelash brand. Are you wearing them right now? Okay, cool. They're lovely. Jason is not wearing the eyelashes, if you guys were wondering. His girlfriend's wearing the eyelashes. But that being said, the milestones are legit. And you are in your early 20s. I know that age is not a characteristic, but it's important to note. And you've had not just financial success, but a lot of like success in the public space. And I think that wraps it for your kind of milestones today. Did I miss anything important? I'm sure I kind of grazed over things. Okay, cool. I wanted people to know that because I wanted to know that I'm not just sitting down with somebody who thinks that they know culture. You've actually really penetrated that really confidently. So I want to talk about that briefly. When it comes to culture, Jason, actually, you know what? Let's not start there. Let's start with your family stuff. One thing I see in you that I don't think maybe a lot of folks recognize it. You tell me if you get this compliment often. You've had a high level of success Your publicity is unrivaled. You've been a major influencer, as you said, but you're also a giver. You know, like you're truly not in this to just stunt and to be all egotistical, as often influencers get, because that stuff can get to your head pretty quickly, soaking money. You've done a pretty good job at remaining pretty core and true to your values. And I'm curious as to where those values started, what you think those values are, and how you keep them alive.
I think that what sets me apart from most modern entrepreneurs and gurus today, and, you know, the other people on social media who are big on influencers, is that I started a lot earlier than them. I started in 2012 on a digital space. I was doing marketing on different channels way before influencer was actually a thing. So I think because I'm kind of old in this space, that I never really caught on the trend to have to flex. You know, if you look at people on Instagram right now, they're posting next to supercars with their fancy watches with a lot of money, and they're making okay money. But they feel that they have to portray the specific lifestyle in order for people to treat them with respect. Whereas because I started so early that I earned my respect through my achievements and my companies, that I don't feel that need to show materialistic things in order to say that, hey, I'm actually making a lot of money off the internet. So I think it's just me being here for so long, and that I've noticed that everyone else who's actually successful and been doing this for a long time aren't doing the same thing, that I was just following their footsteps. I was like, you know, be humble, just be low key. Why let everyone know that you're making a lot of money? You know, maybe if the press talk about it, I'll screenshot it and post about it. But I don't really go out and be like, yeah, you know, making a lot of money right now. Here's all the cars I bought. I don't talk about that.
Yeah, I know. And I respect that. And I also think it's underpinned and it's underwritten by this like deep desire that you have to just show people love and to give, right? You created an incredible course. It's out, right? I believe that it's released, right? Yeah. How's it doing?
Oh, it's dope. Like I've been so busy with the other companies that haven't really promoted it. So I haven't talked
about it. That's why I didn't know. I didn't know if it was fully out.
Yeah, we're going to promote it starting next week. It's just that so many things happened the past few months with all the companies that we're building. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll lay down for a bit.
I was looking at the topics and it was like you were literally giving people more value. And I'm not just saying this, folks, if you're listening as like something to just pat Jason on the back. Like I saw more value in there and more depth and more time and more love and more giving put into this. Like he really wanted anyone to know that not only is it possible for you to start, but it's possible for you to win. And here's how you do it. Where does that giving nature come from?
I love to teach. I really do. I see the potential in people and I invest in them. And one thing that I do is that when I hire, I don't hire them based on skills. I hire them based on their potentials and what they ambitions are.
Interesting.
I talk to them. We take personality tests for all our employees.
What kind of personality test do you use?
We use three different types of personality tests. There's the 16 personality test, the usual one.
Yeah.
And then there's the Big Five test.
Big Five is nice, yeah.
And then there's, I think this also called the Big Ocean test. I forgot what's the name of it.
What do you look for in all that?
So there's not a specific thing that we look for. We just look at how well they pair with the other people that we have on the team based on personality. So like, you know, can they work well with others? What's their creative levels? Are they curious? Are they narcissistic? All that stuff. So it's like there's so many different things that we look for. So it's not like a pass or fail. It's like, can you really come in and work with us as a team? That's really the good foundation of the company. But that's really what we look for. Like, I don't invest in people because they've done so much money in the past. Like, actually, most people that we brought on are, pretty amateurs in this industry, people that have been following me for a while and understand what I do. You have to have a passion for what you do, and then I will invest in you. I'll give you my time. I'll give you my money. I'll teach you everything that I do.
Wow.
And when I hire people, I tell them one thing, is that I don't expect you to stay here. I'm not hiring you to work for me for 10 years. I'm hiring you to learn enough about this industry so you can start off and do your own thing if you want to. So some people are actually natural entrepreneurs. They want to come in. They want to learn. We, you know, incubate their knowledge, their ideas, and then they go on to start their own stuff. I have some people who are very successful after working with me. But then there are some people who are just comfortable working with me because they like doing their own part. They like knowing exactly what they need to do and do it. Then I keep them. You know, I don't hire anyone to be like, yeah, you got to work for me for 20 years. None of that.
That's not how you
run. I want to grow them to become their independent thinkers, and you know, they can start their own business, and I'll help them if they want to.
Very cool. And I see that in you. So that shows up in your employees. But again, and this is my fault because I derailed you. Where does that giving nature come from in you? You were talking about you see the potential in people. Why? Why do you just so naturally? Was it natural you see the potential in people, or?
Yeah, like I know that I didn't start with a lot of opportunities. I started off with nothing. I create all these opportunities for myself. And I understood that my age was a big factor and my years of experience was also a big factor. No one wanted to teach me. There's no mentorship back in the day or, you know, no free mentorships. You know, there's no one going on IG stories telling you how they build their business. There's no one that show you how to do something right because they don't want you to do something right. They want you to fail because they did something right already. Yeah. So I'm just seeing all this trend. I'm like, why? Why are we limiting ourselves? I don't feel like I'm creating competitors. If one of my employees leave off and start their own lash brand, I don't care. Just do it. Like, I support you. There's enough people in this world right now that we can all have a big piece of the pie without me feeling threatened. If I can teach you how to do business properly, then that's great. It makes the entire industry a little bit better, right? I don't want to create scammers and people who don't know how to do business and create a negative customer experience for everyone involved. So if I'm able to teach you how to do something right and go on and do something, you know, better, create a bigger company, I'm happy for you. That means I did something right, right? So it's not always about black and white. I'm not creating competitors. Yeah. I like giving you the opportunities. If you take it and you grow something with it, I'm very happy with you.
Interesting, man. I got to give you props for that. Yeah, it's beautiful, dude. I think it'd be really nice if most folks thought that way. It really would. I love that. You don't feel like you're creating competitors. In fact, all the best leaders, they don't see themselves as leaders as much as they just do just people who believe in something, and then they just keep on believing it, and then one day they look back and there's a shit ton of people following them. And it's not because like they were ever out to have those folks following them, but they just believed in something so wholeheartedly, wanted others to partake in not a belief, but a belief of their own, and then to set them on their way or to have them come join ship. So that's really great. More on just life stuff, because I think a lot of your interviews are very focused on business. I'm going to get there briefly, but you spoke on self-image and we just spoke on values. I'm curious, and then we'll kind of come out of this little hole. What do you feel is currently at this stage in your life, Jason, missing?
Right now, stability.
Stability.
Still. I gave that same answer 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Stability. I'm still looking for it.
What would give you stability?
A very, very well-run business without me being in it. Right now, I'm still very involved in the entire operations. I'm still have to be there on a day-to-day basis. A little bit better now because I've hired like a good operation manager. I have a COO. But still, like, I think stability will happen once I have a team that can run the business on its own and I can start doing other projects. But stability also comes from my personal life. I feel like I haven't done enough to make my family live a better life. You know, they're still living in their own house. I want to get them something that's a little bit better. I want to elevate their life a little bit. So like there's still a lot of instability right now in different parts of my life, in business and personal, that I feel like I need to fix. So that's what I'm working towards.
Cool. I can appreciate that, man. Yeah. I know you'll do it soon. Yeah, I know the stability thing. I don't know if it's ever going to completely go away considering your chosen career in life, but
I
think it'll definitely tone down to a reasonable point. This is a bit of a dark topic, but I think you handled it well. Oftentimes on your Instagram stories, I'll see you talk and you'll say things like, you know, I've been feeling sad this week, right? You're very vulnerable. You're very open with your audience. I love that about you. And you often even just poke fun at it, or like you'll post like a joke picture of like, for anybody listening, and you don't follow Jason yet. He has this giant pillow at his place and the pillow is a face of him. I promise you, it's not as egotistical as it sounds. It's more of a joke. But anyways, like you'll throw that pillow around or you do some jokes with it. A lot of folks who tune in struggle with staying happy. Or not staying happy, but experiencing that emotion often. I like how you deal with your downtimes. And I'd be curious to know if you'd be open to talking about those and your thought process when things are painful.
Yeah, for sure. I think that this whole journey, it's very rough for most people. And it takes a lot of strength to endure it. And I'm not just saying that, you know, most people can't take it, but it's really a different level of pain. You have to think about sacrificing your personal life, your time, social life. And you also have to see the failure. Sometimes when you fail, you're like, is it really worth it that I'm sacrificing all this stuff? And all this actually really piles up on you once in a while. You're like, man, this, I'm putting myself in this much debt to like risk it all for my business. Is it really worth it? And then when things don't go well, when you launch a product and you get negative feedbacks, you're like, okay, maybe I just wasted 6 months of my time on something bad. Having all this come up to you sometimes differently, sometimes at the same time, hit you different, you know? And I'm never the one to shy away from expressing my emotions. I think that that's my coping mechanism for me to post memes about it, for me to poke fun at it. That's how I cope. If I don't do it, I'm like, man, I'm just gonna be really sad about it.
Yeah.
But I don't say that I'm sad in order to fish for compliments. I don't do that. You can see like when I post, I'm like just making fun of it.
Yeah.
For me, that makes me a little bit happy. Like, yeah, I can laugh about it and I'll just move on and do some other stuff. I don't say it to be like, yeah, I'm really sad. Come send me some DMs. You know, I don't do that. But I also do that to show other people that this is a reality of starting your own business. It's not all, you know, sunshines and rainbows. Most people, when they look at entrepreneurs, they see supercars, they see the Lambos in the garage, they see the houses, and like, yeah, that's the life I want to live. I never show any of that. Mm. I show the dark side of it. Not the dark side intentionally, but because that's literally what I'm going through.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that you have to be vulnerable. You have to have emotions. You have to show people that this is a thing. If you don't, then people would just be like, yeah, I want to be an entrepreneur. I see Jason happy all the time. Like, he's traveling. He's doing good. Like, I want to be like him. I'm like, dude, like, that's a byproduct of it. But I work my ass off for me to do all this. So I want to put people on their place, show them the reality as much as I can in terms of what I'm going through. And, you know, just really show them that if you want to get to the good side, you have to endure all the bad stuff. And this is all the bad stuff I'm going through.
Mm, yeah, man. I love that you share that stuff. And I think broader than just being an entrepreneur, being on this journey, everyone struggles, like on any path that they want to go down. I was talking to Amy earlier. I'm not sure if she wants to do entrepreneurship or not, but she wants to be a nurse. And like, she's got her own stuff, right? And everyone has their own stuff, right? So it's neat that you give an insight into how you handle it. And I love how you handle it. Coming out of that hole a little bit, let's talk about self-help, like books and podcasts and all that fun stuff. Quick question, yes or no, do you partake?
In reading, yeah.
Yeah.
Once
yeah?
in a while.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about that. How often do you read? How often do you listen to podcasts? You said once in a while.
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Really?
Yeah, like maybe like 2-3 times a week, put Amy on it too.
Yeah. Is it mostly like just hacky shit, like just like fun stuff,
or
is it
mixer of business and personal? Okay. I mostly listen to founder stories.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I listen to podcasts like How I Built This.
That's a lovely podcast.
And then founder podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Just like listening to stories of how people built things gets me very curious. I'm like, yeah, how'd you build a $7 million company? And it's always starting off and be like, yeah, because I was really broke and I want to do something. I was like, yeah, that's what I was going through.
Yeah, cool.
So listening to podcasts is really good because when you're driving through LA traffic, that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Books is more like once in a while because, you know, you have to really commit to it.
Yeah. And
I'm always distracted by notifications, people messaging me. I got to check. So
yeah.
Sometimes reading a book takes a while. So
yeah,
podcast
fair.
Is the way to go. But cool. Yeah.
And what about events and conferences and stuff like that?
I don't do any of those anymore.
Cool. Sounds good. Anymore?
Completely avoid events.
Did you ever go at one point?
Yeah, I used to go like a lot when I first moved to LA.
Cool.
I go up to all the entrepreneur events, meet up with other marketers and people, and I realized that I don't like any of them.
You don't like the people, or you don't like or you don't like the events?
The atmosphere just feels like everyone's trying to like have transactions.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, like every person you meet, they're like, yeah, I do this, I can help you with this, and it seems very superficial.
I agree.
For me, like, go up to them. They're like, yeah, you know what? Like, I can run your Instagram. I can help you market your company. And then the other people are like, yeah, let me know what I can help you with. Like, I want to provide value to you. And it seems very script because they all interact with other people and they learn each other's script and they kept doing it because they think that's how they grow their network. I don't talk to any of those people.
Yeah.
None of them.
Yeah, I agree, man. Neither do I. I actually don't like the word networking at all. I hate it. Like, yeah. I think it's just nice to go out, make friends, and do nice things for folks. And if you connect, you connect. It's really simple. And you keep on bringing it up silently. So I want to talk about it because it's going to come soon and I might as well bring it up now. Everything you do is underpinned and almost underwritten by what's happening in culture at this point in time, right? You're very good. I feel like you have a really good grip on culture. I feel like everyone can see it, but you're really close to it. And that's given you the privilege of inserting yourself in moments in culture and really scaling and having like these elevator moments where you'll like not be running up the stairs, but you'll see an elevator. It'll jet you up 20 floors, right? Like the ice cream cone thing or whatever it may be. You're just intelligent at that. You have this ability to understand it. I think part of it, this is my assumption, tell me if I'm right, is a part in you're really good at being yourself. You know, I think all books, all podcasts, all self-help is taking the long way home. Sometimes you need it. I've needed it in the past too. Just a long way home to just be yourself. You're good at being yourself when you're not having the greatest days. You're good at being yourself when you know that you're not even around people who are being themselves, which is why you don't go to these events. And that also bleeds into your work. So it's everything that you do. How have you been able to get such a good grip coming from China, learning culture at a later rate than anyone else here? Maybe that actually gave you an advantage. How have you been able to maintain such an amazing grip on culture? And what's your general view on how culture works? Because you've been able to insert yourself into it in just the most amazing parts to scale you.
I think that goes back to your point that I came here really late. And I think that's the biggest factor, is that when I come in, I don't come in growing up with the culture. I come in from an outsider perspective. I'm looking from the outside the box. And I'm like, okay, that's one point I want to get into. That's another point I want to get into. A lot of people, when they grow up with culture, they're immersed in it. They grew up for the past 20 years knowing that culture, and they don't change from it. I come in and I'm looking from outside the club. I'm like, yeah, that's one thing I want to take. That's another take. One thing I want to take. That's what I admire. I respect that. And I take it all together, and I kept building on it. Another thing is that I lived in a lot of different places. So when I first moved to America, I lived in New York, New York City and upstate, which is two drastic different demographics.
Yeah.
I lived in Indiana. I lived in Oklahoma, which is above Texas for those of you that don't know where Oklahoma is. I lived in California, lived in Florida. And Canada.
And Toronto. He's lived in Canada, guys. He's Canadian, I swear. Are you Canadian?
I have a permanent resident card here.
Okay, so, cool. Technically. So he's Canadian. That's our Canadian welcoming for him. Yeah.
But,
Don't forget about us, bro.
All of those places have different cultures. Florida is very rednecky, conservative. They love guns. They love high trucks, And then there's Oklahoma, very military-based. Like, everyone's into the army. California, everyone's super free living, they're chilling. And then I moved to Toronto, and I'm like, yeah, this is the kind of people that I like. Toronto felt like home to me. That's really one thing that I can say, is that Toronto felt like everyone here understands me. Everywhere else is like, I try to get into the culture, I try to do what they like, I try to go out, go hunting with them, go fishing. I'm like, yeah, I like it, but I still don't feel it inside of me.
Mm.
So when you're an immigrant to a new country, you're looking for identity. And I moved here when I was 8. 8 years old, when you're at the adolescent stage, you're constantly lost of who you are. You don't know who you want to be. And so I was constantly lost. I was switching between acting like them. I dress like them. I talk like them. It just never felt right. I moved to Toronto and I see all these kids that look like me. They talk like me. I understand their culture. We can actually eat the same food together. Other people are like, nah, I actually don't like it. Your food's kind of nasty. I moved to Toronto. I'm like, yeah, we actually can go out, get some Korean barbecue. We can eat together. We can talk. We can laugh at our own childhood movies that we watched together. Like, it felt like home. So understanding cultures from so many different perspectives, I can actually say that I have a good judgment of what I like and what I don't like and what I respect and not. Having all that collected together, I was like, yeah, I can actually understand everyone's thinking now. Because, it's just not like I grew up very liberal, very conservative. I didn't grow up with anything. So for me to come in at that later stage, I understand culture from different perspectives. I can actually formulate my own understanding of what's happening, and I start building upon it.
You just gave me in that spiel, man. And I think you hopefully will give other folks, including myself, an entirely new reason to travel. Travel is not just about so you can go see new places. It's also so you can get to know yours. Because if you travel and you, let's say, spend 2 months in, I don't know, a place like Asia, a lot of people go there, Europe, and you come back home, you'll start to notice nuances that you didn't notice before that have allowed you to penetrate it, which is beautiful. So you view culture in a really conceptual way because you've been able to, and for folks who don't know, actually, let's go here quickly. Let's talk about the ice cream cone thing because it's like a neat little story and it'll be an anecdote that help folks really understand, okay, this guy really knows how to go viral. And anyone listening, I'm not just saying, this guy knows how to go viral because he's got some big, no, he really, I think you understand it differently. So let's talk about the ice cream cone thing. Why don't you tell that story?
All right. So before I get into the ice cream cone, I want to tell you how I got the idea.
Yeah, sure.
I was just on Twitter and I see someone go viral for these two old couples. They got viral for going to every single restaurant, the same chain restaurant. I forgot which one it was, Cracker Barrel or something. And okay. They went to all 200 locations and they went viral for it. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But I didn't think much about it. I just see it and I remember it. I went to Japan with my dad, who I haven't seen in so many years because my parents are divorced. And it's the first time we really reconnected. And it was our first family trip in over a decade. I went there and with our, stepmom, with my aunts and uncles, and we went there. And one thing that I noticed around Tokyo is that there's a lot of ice cream cones. And when I talk about ice cream cones, I'm talking about like little statues. Like every single ice cream shop has an ice cream cone in front of it. And I start seeing patterns. So the first day, I didn't really think much about it. I was like, okay, that's cool. That's I guess that's like a Japanese thing to have ice cream statues.
Yeah.
What they're selling. And then the second day, I was like, man, what if I just visit all the ice cream cones that I see, just like the couple did with the restaurant? And so I got my dad to take a picture of me with every single ice cream cone that I come across. And by the 10th cone, everyone knows what's up. Like all my family members start pointing it out. And we'll just be walking and my dad's like, hey, there's an ice cream cone over there. Like, go take a picture of it. And it becomes a bonding experience for my dad and I. Because, you know, Asian parents don't really show affection. And those of you like who are in that kind of household understands what it means, that we don't say I love you. We don't say, you know, we don't hug. We don't say any of that stuff. So we show our love in different ways. And for me, that was like, he understands what I'm trying to do. Like, he knows how to make things viral for a living. And he's trying to help me act like grow that and try to help me get more content. And I'm like, man, that's love. So we're just walking and he started pointing out left and right. And we got 60 ice cream cones in 2 days. And I just posted all on Twitter, like me and him taking pictures next to the cones together. I'll hold the cone. I'll squat next to it. I'll do different posts. Posted all on Twitter and, you know, got like 10, 15 likes. Nothing really happens. It's chill. A month later, it went trending worldwide.
How? What happened? Were you around for this, Amy?
No, that was like way before.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't be together if it was just like, what's this guy doing with ice cream cones? You look him up, you're like, screw this guy. No, he doesn't get a second chance.
I don't know what happened. It went on Twitter and it got like 10,000 likes within like the first hour. Everyone's texting me. They're like, yo, like, I was just on Twitter and I see like you on like the moments, like Twitter moments. And Twitter moments is a explore page.
Yeah.
But instead of like the Instagram explore page, which is based on your algorithm, Twitter curates what goes on the explore page on Twitter. And I was one of them. I was under like the funny category. I was like, wait, what's happening? And I started getting interview requests. I got pressed left and right. Everyone's writing about us. CBS, you know, a Fortune magazine wanted to do like one. Time magazine wrote an article about it. I'm like, oh, what's going on? I just took pictures. But I know that my first intention was to go viral. I knew that, but it just didn't work out at first. And a month later, it just got picked up.
So is it always random like that, man? Like just
no?
Like is there it
usually you artificially inflate the engagements by doing marketing through your own network. So you get people to retweet it. You're like, you text all your friends with a lot of followers. You're like, hey, can you retweet this? And you all do it at the same time.
Got it.
One thing about making viral content is that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just like how I try to emulate what other people did. You try to take on one viral thing and you try to put in your own element into it. So, you know, for the ramen condom product that I made a box of condoms that look like ramen noodle packaging. And I got inspired by that because there was a meme saying that, oh, this ramen noodle seasoning looks like a condom package. I was like, oh, I can make a product about that. So you don't always have to think of like new viral stuff to do. You just have to see what worked before and put in your own element into it. And that's the single most helpful thing that has helped me create viral content.
Interesting, man. And you're really open about the fact that you just shoot it out to your other influencer friends and then you guys all post at the same time and what have you. Take us through the process of like how to take something from nothing to actually making it viral.
There's a lot of planning process. I have a notepad on my phone. I just write all the ideas I can do and who I can hit up to post about it. And also like different caption angles. There's very specific ways that you can write your caption for people to want to react to it. And also the other secret to viral content is that you always want to have multiple points of topics within a viral content. For example, for the product that I made for the ramen noodle condom, the back of the condom has nutrition facts. So people can talk about it. They're like, oh my God, this ramen noodle has nutrition facts. Or like, you know, the fact that it looks like actual ramen noodle. And then when you open up the wrappers, it looks like the seasoning packet. So you want to have multiple things within one single topic that people can talk about. And whenever you make something go viral, you actually want to create commentary first. So what we would do is that we would have fake accounts, retweet it, use a quote or caption it, and caption with the things that we want to point out. So I'll have one account talk about the nutrition facts of the ramen noodle condoms. Yeah. And I have another person be like, oh my God, this thing actually happens. So you want to have all these commentary happen first with your own account, and then you push it all. You push different points of topics within it. And so people have so many different things to talk about it that they're all spamming into talking one single thing. That's the one single thing that I did that has helped me go about every single time.
And can other people do this without these influencer networks? Like how many people do you have to hit up? to spread it.
Just one or two with really big networks. I mean, like, people still go viral, like, all the time without having influencers. Like, but it's very hard.
But it's helpful when you have the influencer friends, right?
It guarantees it, essentially. But if you don't, then you just have to worry about, like, your friends and, like, you know, your high school friends with 900 followers on Instagram, you know, sharing on their story. So, like, it really depends if you're just not having access to these influencers that you gotta help use your friends from high school and college. And, hey, maybe you can retweet it or, like, share it. But, like, when you have a good network of people that you can hit up, it's almost guaranteed that's gotta go viral.
So then what's the biggest mistake that you think folks who are trying to go viral, trying to create trendy things are making commonly? That you see, you're like, it's not going to work, it's not going to work,
They're not writing in the language that they want used for their target audience.
Wait, can you say that again?
They're writing in the language that they think it's funny. They don't think about what other people think is funny. So it sounds very vague and harsh, but, like, you know, when we write captions, we write about, like, what's our target demographic that we want to share this, and how can we speak like them? Like, how can we make it seem like we're part of them? A lot of people, whenever they write caption, they're like, yeah, this thing is funny. I'm just gonna write it in my own voice. And maybe, yeah, you're staying authentic to yourself, but sometimes you just have to be another character in order for your caption to work.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's one mistake that I've seen a lot. The other thing is that their pictures are too perfect. You can't take too perfect of a picture.
Yeah.
Those seem too staged. So I sometimes, like, I'll blur my phone. I'll shake my phone a little bit to take pictures.
Really?
Just to make it seem more realistic. Yeah. There's so many different tactics you can use.
I love that.
It's like, you ever seen that pose where they, like, show you how they take fast food pictures?
No.
Like, yeah. Like, if you use, for pancakes, when they shoot pictures of pancakes or videos of pancakes,
okay,
they use motor oil instead of syrup because it looks more shiny and looks more, just more satisfying. For hamburgers, they'll put, like, cardboards in between each stack to make it look taller. So, like, there's so many, like, different tactics.
We're so used to that.
Yeah.
That it's nice to pull back and just get something real.
So, like, for them, like, they have to stage it. For the opposite side of going viral, you have to make it seem, like, not staged at all. So you use whatever you can to make it seem real.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Out of respect for your time, I want to speed things up. It's 12:10. When's your heart out? So I know.
Whenever you want.
Yeah? Okay, cool. I don't want to take up too much. We'll probably have a stop at 12:30 if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
Cool with you, Amrit?
Yeah.
Amy, is that cool with you? All right, lovely. Everyone in the room's on board. I am too. That was wonderful. Now, you have this interesting thing where I mentioned it before, but you have, like, a good thumb on virality. And I know I keep on coming back to that, but you have a good thumb on culture. Do you know who Scooter Braun is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So anybody listening who doesn't know who that is, he runs SB Projects. So he manages Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, all these incredible artists. I missed a ton, but really awesome dude. He has mentioned time and time again that part of his secret sauce is he just goes, man, people think I'm, like, some really good guy at marketing, but the truth is that my biggest hack is that I'm just an ordinary dude. And if I'm an ordinary dude and I think something's exciting, I hear a song that I like and I get excited about it, chances are other people who are also ordinary are going to get excited about it.
Yep.
So I don't need to be extraordinary. I just look at what's exciting for me blindly and I just say, okay, I think I can make this work. And just run the basics on it. And things actually happen. It's a lot more simple than you think. Do you agree with that or not really?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think the biggest mistake that people do is that they overthink it. They're like, you know what? I got to think like a marketer. What makes people click? What makes people share? Like, they overthink the process because they think that's what gets other people there. But, like, for the most part, I just think about, like, what my high school self retweet this. Like, what I want to talk about this. Like, is this actually exciting to me as an ordinary person? Like, because I don't personally think that, you know, you need to have a lot of experience or, like, a lot of knowledge in order to make something great. You have to think about the way that other people think when they see your product, and you have to step into their shoes. So you got to think about, like, if you're marketing to this mom, you got to think like a mom. Like, when moms think about, they're like, oh, they're thinking about, like, the safety of their children. Like, does it make their child happy? All that stuff. Like, you use, like, very specific words. When people think of, like, marketing, they think of, like, oh, here's the buzzwords we got to use. Here's a picture angle we got to use. And for the most part, it's not that complicated. You're overcomplicating things, and in that sense, it seems very fake and superficial for a lot of people.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool. I was hoping you'd go there. And actually, and I got two more questions on business, and then we'll wrap up on business stuff. Mm-hmm. On your Instagram, people don't know this, you often will show behind the scenes. And let's just face it, you run multi-million dollar company. So here's a multi-million dollar company that sure as hell has budget for proper creative. to have people come in with the nice gear, with the nice lighting setup to go hire a studio. Mm-hmm. And I see your ass like holding an iPhone with like somebody holding like a lampshade above it. Yep. And all of like this stuff that collectively must cost like under $100, mm-hmm. like except for the actual iPhone. Mm-hmm. And you take product photos and you post them. And I know that sometimes like you actually go in and then you get the stuff done well done with creative. I know that you did a lot of that with Dolash or Dolashes, but that's an interesting thing. Do you do that on purpose or do you do that just because you're trying to save costs or do you do that just because you believe I can do this myself? Like what's that, what's that voice in you that helps you do that?
Some of that actually. So my idea is that I want to tell people that you don't need a lot of money to start your own business.
Got it.
We live in a stage in society where people are accepting iPhone pictures as good pictures. People actually prefer that because it seems more natural. It doesn't seem like a stage behind studio lights. So I started using a lot of iPhone pictures and I seen that convert a lot better for my e-commerce stores. The other thing is that I want to show people that, you know, you don't need the fancy gear. You don't need a $3,000 camera. But maybe if you want to get to the next level, then you can use it. But in the very beginning stage, in order for you to validate an idea or to like get something going, you just use your phone.
Cool.
And also, two is that I'm very cheap. Yeah. So yeah. That's how I like to start. And then cool. Once you make a little bit of money, yeah, we can invest in the photographer. But for the most part, you can just use your phone, man.
Cool. I love that. Two favorite. Actually, I have a little bit more than two questions, actually. You went to China recently
yep.
to do a lot of negotiating for and a lot of business deals for Dolashes.
Mm-hmm.
What are your best negotiating tips?
Get them drunk.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
What if okay.
But that's common. That's literally the tactic that you take. You ask every single person that has gone to China, they came back drunk.
Really?
So in China, the negotiating process is a very long and lengthy process. I'm talking about like over 2-3 days. We don't just come in, sit on the table and be like, yeah, here's a deal. You do this is deliverable. Here's how much. We don't do any of that. We go in, drink some tea. They brew. They use it like a tea machine on their office table. They brew the tea, ask you about your day, you know, whatever you want to ask. Brew the tea, it takes like 2-3 hours. And then, you know, like, hey, let's make some dinner plans. Get dinner. They bring the wine. Sometimes you bring the wine. And they bring Chinese liquor. Chinese liquor is 60% alcohol, okay? Like, it's nothing to play with. Sometimes 70%. They get them drunk. You get them drunk too. And then the next day, you wake up hungover. And you're like, let's have a meeting at 11 a.m. You go over there and then you start talking business. That's the process.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's step number one is get them drunk.
Yeah.
What about just negotiating tips in general? Folks aren't going to China or even if they are going to China, like what are some great tips to help drive down price and meet people at a fair point?
You want to ask as many questions as you want.
No matter how stupid they seem?
No, seriously, ask every single question. And you want to have an exact breakdown of why the price is the way it is. Many people will just quote you, yeah, like this water bottle costs 30 cents. But then you got to be like, okay, how much is the, you know, the little label? How much is the cap? How much is the content inside? You want to get a breakdown of every single thing and you ask them how it's made. Where did you get the water from? Where's the source? What's the paper that the label's being printed on?
Got it.
And you understand how many things you can actually customize within that product. And then you can actually make it a little bit cheaper and make it a little bit more expensive depending on the material. And you can start adjusting. It's like a little toggle. You can go up and down. So you want to get as many things as you can out of them, understand where everything's made, how it's made, and the breakdown, and then you can start negotiating from there.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And are there any other really big negotiating tips that you want to share?
You want to build rapport. China's all about relationship. That's why we do the dinner. That's why we get them drunk. A lot of businesses, if you're a guy and they're a guy, they take you to a sauna, to a hot tub.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting like naked, butt ass naked in the hot tub talking business.
Yeah.
It's a neat experience. When you're fully naked, you have nothing else to hide, right? Yeah. Like all the cards are on the table. You just got to talk.
Yeah.
So, you know, China's a very interesting country where they do things a lot more differently than the Western world. So mm-hmm. a lot of people who are from the Western world, they go to China, they get a little confused. They're like, yeah, why are they taking me to a sauna?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's how you build a relationship. In China, everything's family-based. You know, when China... Well, before the Industrial Revolution in China, you know, before the factory jobs, it was all shipping, like farming or agriculture, or fishing, right? Everything was done within a family, in a village. So everything's very communal. People built relationship and they trade with people that have relationship with. It's not just like, you know, knocking on the door and be like, yeah, let's make a deal right now. That's what is done in the Western world. They go in, they talk about a deal, they sign it and they get out, right? In China, they're like, yeah, let's eat together. I want you to meet my family. Here's my wife. Huh. We just had a baby right now. And then you bring them some gift for their family. You bring them, you know, food, their, you know, stuff from America, and they really like you. You build a relationship, and then you negotiate.
That's lovely.
That's something that they don't really teach you in textbooks. You don't teach about like how to build a relationship in textbooks. You just have to know how to do it. And you know what? At the end of the day, you just have to be a good person. They can see that. Yeah. They can see if you're going there with, you know, an agenda.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, yeah, we're going there with an agenda. We're getting cheaper prices. We want to get better deals, but you can't really show that.
Yeah.
You have to go from like, let's build a relationship. I like your family. Let's get some food. You know, whenever you want to travel to America, stay at my place. You got to do stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to lead. You got to lead with giving. I love that.
If they like you, they give you the friend price, you know?
Exactly, man. I'm sure you've had a lot of those. How do you connect with others? So you're in a space where you've been an influencer for a while, but what do you use to open doors?
My Instagram.
Yeah.
People come to me, they DM me. If I really respect someone, I tell them. I'm not the type to be shy and be like, yeah, I really like you, but I'm not gonna talk to you.
What about when you were just starting, before you had a big influence? Because now, I'm not saying it's easy, but it is easier with an Instagram, a bit of a following, a bit of a network. But what did you do when you were just getting started at the beginning levels to get connected?
Giving everything I could. I did job for free. I worked for people for, you know, absolutely no money.
Yeah.
And then they introduced me to their friends who might pay me a little bit of money to do a job for them. I gave a lot. I gave, you know, I blog about my experience. I teach them how to do this journey. And then I do jobs for this person and this person. I did a lot of free work. I think I did free work for maybe 2 years.
Wow.
Before I started getting paid.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's the giving nature too. Like, yeah. I understand that in order to survive in this, in this industry, you have to give a lot more and show your proof. You have to show your value.
Yeah.
When you're just starting out as an 18-year-old, no one's gonna take you seriously. You're like, hey, pay me $3,000 a month for a retainer. No one's gonna pay you that. They don't know you. They don't know what you do. But once you start giving a lot more value, you start having people that vouch for you. They're like, yeah, you know, Jason's actually a pretty great guy. He did some stuff for me back in the day. They're not gonna say that it was free. But they're like, yeah, he did some stuff. It was great. You can actually like trust him.
Yeah.
And that's how you get your clients. So
interesting.
Just got to give a lot, man.
Cool. I love that. Nothing new here, man. You mentioned before that marketing is 50%. I actually have it written down, 50% human behavior and 50% about promoting your content. I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on human behavior? Like, how do you gauge people?
Everyone has their own type of personality. That's why there's a personality test. But of course, there's more than 16 personalities. You have to understand why people react to things. And the reason why people react to things can be their upbringings. Maybe they're taught to react to this thing in a certain way. Maybe they want to be angry or upset or be very happy about something. You just really have to pinpoint your target audience, understand what makes them happy, what makes them react, what makes them share, and understand all that human behavior, see what their habit is. How can you actually get them to keep buying your stuff? Is it because the packaging is nice? Maybe the product is nice. Different people with different personality actually care about different types of things. Once you understand all of that, you formulate all into your own marketing campaigns. You start having your own copywriting. You start having different pictures. And you understand exactly what colors, what pictures. If it's like, you know, having some people laughing in the background in the picture makes people react more. You put all that together, and that's how you formulate your marketing campaign. And that's like the simple way to put it. Obviously, there's a lot more intricate steps
about
it. But like, you just really have to understand human behavior. Like, it's not black and white. Marketing is all psychology. It's entirely psychology. Execution is like 5% of it. You know, like, you know, you just really have to understand who you're marketing to and really get into their mind. Be like, yeah, if I post about this, if I post with, you know, green grass and like a rainbow and like dogs running around, they're actually gonna really like that because they like, you know, happy people in the background. So
do you study that? Do you study psychology pretty often, or are these just insights that you've arrived at on your own?
I took psychology in school, and I realized...
Did you go to school? Well, talk to me about school, actually.
I went in there for like a year for comp sci and
cool.
just
yeah.
left.
But
I read a lot about psychology. It was very interesting for me because I know that psychology is like something that everyone can relate to. Like, if I understand you, I know how to make you do things. I can persuade you to do something. I can make you side with me if I understand how to make you side with me. So all of that... I found so powerful, you know.
Interesting, man. And do you use it as a force for good? Yeah, I'm sure you do.
It's a lot of power, I'll tell you that.
Yeah? Okay. Fair enough. I'll leave it at that. I won't dig. All right, we'll wrap into some closing questions here. I sent this to you in advance. I don't know if you figured out an answer, but what's something that less than 5 people know about you that you're willing to share?
I used to live in a garage.
Really?
Yeah, I lived in a garage on like a wooden bed that was made from Home Depot.
When?
When I was like 13, 14.
Really?
Yeah, you know, like times were rough. You know, we didn't come here with money. You know, yeah. We came here, we did everything that we could. Like when people see me now, they want to buy me fancy dinner. They're like, yeah, like, dude, let's go on to like this fancy dinner because I want to impress you. Like they drive their fancy car. They really want to impress me. I'm like, no, like, dude, I'm really, really low maintenance. Like people come to me and they feel like they have to spend a lot of money to impress me. They buy me bottles at clubs. I don't care about any of that. I care about if someone's genuine because I know that I've been to the absolute lowest in my life, in my opinion, and that, you know, everything's good right now. Like, you can take me to McDonald's. I'll be very happy about it. Like, everyone just try to think that, like, you know, because I'm successful now that they have to spend a lot of money with me. I'm like, dude, no, just like take me to like a cheap spot and talk. Yeah. Let's talk about it. Let's talk over coffee. Like,
yeah, you care about, right? Different things.
Yeah, like I really don't care about the money.
Cool. I like that. This is a directly out of Tim Ferriss's handbook. I got to give him credit, but he uses the term 100. I'll use the term 50. Sometimes he uses 50. What's a purchase for $50 or less that you've made in the past 6 months or a year that's substantially impacted your life?
Ooh, there's a lot. I bought a lot of stuff.
Okay.
I bought this GPS tracker for my key.
GPS tracker for your key?
Yeah, it's called a Tile.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I know about Tile.
Yeah, I love Tiles. And, you know, not even plugging them, but, like, I've used them for so many years because I found that I lose my shit a lot.
Okay.
And having that GPS tracker saves me, like, you know, 10 minutes a day in finding my key.
Okay.
And 10 minutes adds up over a month. And I'm like, for me, like, right now, when I spend money, I think about, like, can this save me time? So now I actually, you know, I go to the valet parking because that saves me 15 minutes walking to the parking garage.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff that saves me time, I find more valuable. Mm. Like, if I can use money to buy more time to be more productive, I'll spend money for it.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. Most successful people view it that way. It's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they fly private. Like, they don't want to wait in the line.
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's just, it's all about that time. Okay, this is a personal question of mine. And then we got one more and then we're wrapped. Self-help. The whole industry of it, the events, the podcasting, the interviews, everything. Even me, I struggle with this, I'll be honest. I think that there's an air to it where it gets corny quick, really corny quick. And I know it could help a lot of people. I'm using that industry as an example. There's a lot of industries like it. Why do you think that is, man? Like it turns so many folks away. It's just so not relatable. Like I'm listening to you speak and I'm thinking about even some of the stuff that I've posted on Instagram, and half the stuff, I back it. I back what's being said, but I'm like, man, like I should really give this more thought. You know, I should really give this more thought as to whether or not this is actually something people want to hear because I want it to hit them. And I'm curious, like you tend away from that. You're a very like trendy page. You know what's good. Why is self-help so corny? What do you think that they're missing as an industry as a whole?
I think self-help as a concept is great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Actually, do you agree that it's corny? I apologize to interrupt, but...
Right now, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Absolutely.
Cool. And then, sorry, you were saying?
Because people aren't being themselves. People aren't, you know, speaking the way that they're actually speaking.
Yeah.
They're following a script. They're portraying a character. They're like, yeah, I want to be like, you know, Tim Ferriss. I want to be like this guru. I want to teach people how to make money. And then they follow the script. They follow this lifestyle and they portray it, you know, not even just like the material stuff, but they talk like it. They write like it. They, you know, they post pictures with like them next to, you know, a cliff. And they're like, yeah, you know, I've been thinking a lot lately, but this is what helped me. I'm like, no, this sounds like every other guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'll admit it, I've done that before. Like, I went through that for a little bit. I'm like, yeah, actually, no, that's not me. Like, I don't talk like that. I don't post like that. And at the end of the day, people will see if you're genuine or not.
Mm.
So you can fool a lot of, like, 16-year-olds. Like, they're like, yeah, man, like, you're so cool. You have all these cars. But then, like, for the people who are actually doing it, and that's the people that you want to earn respect from, they can see through you, right?
Yeah.
So they think you're corny, right?
Yeah.
At that point, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I see it. Like, I think self-help is a great, like, topic to do. Like, you should definitely motivate people. You should definitely like spread positivity, but you can't do it in order just to do it. Like you have to do it because you want to do it.
Yeah.
Like don't post about that on Monday and Wednesday at 5 p.m. because you're like, yeah, people want to follow me for positive stuff. Like, no one does that.
Yeah.
Like, they're following 20 other accounts already. Like,
yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly, man. That's respect. That's honest. All right. Final question. I want to do a bit of a gimme. I don't know if you have anything here, but I thought about it on my way here. I think a lot of folks want to connect with some of the people that I've had a chance to sit down with. And I want to start giving them a chance, right? Giving them a bit of a gimme. I believe that when you want to connect with somebody, you got to find a way to help, go reach out and go help them in that way, whether or not they want it or not, just try to find a way to provide value, not in like a shitty way, but in an actual meaningful way. In most cases, I suggest trying to figure out what they need help and not asking them what they need help with. in this case, I'll ask you, is there anything that you're looking for help-wise? Not for me. I want to do it for my audience in case anybody wanted to connect and somebody might be able to provide this for you.
I just want to keep teaching.
Cool.
Yeah, like, you know, if you need help, if anyone's listening and they're like, yeah, like I like what you're saying and I kind of want to get into that direction, can you help me?
Cool.
I'll be more than happy to. I've always said that for every single one of my podcasts. It's like, you know, if you're listening, like, reach out to me. But one thing that I don't like about people reaching out to me is that they ask very vague questions and they expect you to guide them through it. Mm. They're like, hey, how can I start my business? I'm like, dude, that's not the question you should be asking me. You should be asking me a very specific things. Like, you know, like, yeah, I'm kind of having trouble with like shipping this product right now. It's kind of too heavy. Like, what do you think I should do? Like, ask me questions like that. I can give you the exact answer. I can give you the exact place to go to. Don't be like, hey, I'm 18 years old right now. I really want to make money. What can I do? Like, don't ask me what can I do. Like, if I know what to do, I would be doing it right now, right?
Yeah.
So like, don't ask stupid questions. Like, and I'm like, actually, no, I can't say it like that because some people be like, yeah, maybe my question's a little stupid. But like, don't ask questions that you can find on the internet.
Mm.
You know, like ask me questions that you feel like the internet isn't really explaining it too well, and cool. You want like clarification about it. So that's my biggest pet peeve, man. Like, I get that so often.
Yeah, that's fair.
So often.
It's a time waster, man.
Yeah.
This is not plan after having you said that, but is there anything that I didn't ask that you would prefer or would enjoy talking about?
You know what? I think you asked a really good question. I'm very honest, and you asked questions that no one ever asked.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I like that. You actually did your research. I'm really impressed.
I had to. I started off with the old favorite body part, and then we ended on...
Caught me off guard.
Yeah, I know. I had to. Do you have any questions for me?
How long have you been doing this?
2.5 years.
What do you like the most about doing this?
Just the chance to have a genuine exchange. I love talking with folks who have done really neat things with their life, and having a chance to sit down and engage with that for a bit is special. I think when you have an opportunity to meet somebody at the point of their passion, you could talk to a chef, somebody who's an entrepreneur, somebody who's a barista.
Would you say that having a podcast is very helpful in you making that connection? Like, do you think that's a good starting point?
Yeah, I never actually planned to have a podcast. I just like randomly was at a conference 2.5 years ago. Gary Vee, you know, Gary Vee, obviously, he was doing like a Q&A. And then I raised my hand and I found like this cheeky way to ask him if I could meet him. And it worked. I just wanted to do it. I was a fanboy, dude. Like, I did it in the wrong way. I did it in the way that I wouldn't recommend today. But I was just geeking out over Gary. I was young. You know those ones.
Yeah.
And then I went to New York and I met him. And I was hella nervous. But at the time, I wanted to be a vlogger because I was following Casey Neistat. I didn't know who I was. And a lot of people saw the actual video. Not a lot, but a lot for me. And I said, okay, this is neat. And then coincidentally, Gary was coming back to Canada and I had an opportunity to sit down with him again and Casey. And I said, I should start a little show. And I tried to do it twice. I launched it twice and then I shut it down twice because I was just like upset with the way I did it. And this is my third round, but this time it's here to stay.
I think you're doing really well for either round.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Charm, right?
Yeah, I appreciate it, dude. I appreciate it. Next time I'm in LA, let's connect, man. Let's have dinner.
Let's link.
I appreciate it, dude. Right. Yo, you're amazing, dude. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Amy, thanks for being here. That's a wrap, everybody. Amrit, we're out.